wake up. There's no sleeping in on Saturday. It's time for the Paul Santos Show on WBSM. Join Paul as he tackles local issues, current events, and fun conversations. Call 508-996-0500 or send Paul an app chat message on the WBSM app. Now, here's Paul Santos.
Back with the second and final hour of the Paul Santos Show. We're absolutely pleased to have a special guest during hour number two, as promised. In light of the preliminary election that we had on Tuesday, we thought we'd have the guy to come down here and kind of crunch the numbers. And he always have the pulse of what's going on, not only with local politics, but nationally. We are going to focus mostly on local politics today. We welcome to our microphones Mr. Tom Hunt. Tom, how are you?
Excellent, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Always great to have attorney Tom Hunt to talk local elections. We've had the opportunity to work together on election night for almost two decades on local cable television and the last few go-rounds on New Bedford Guide. And it's always exciting, and we hope to have Tom with us on election night this coming November. But I got to tell you, a couple of stories here. Story number one, the apathy, before we get to the breakdown of the election. Over 94% of the people did not vote. Imagine that. And even if you clear out the rolls and say that there are some names on there of people that passed away and everything else, it's certainly well over 90%. So 90% of the people don't give a damn who's on the council? I mean, is that what that means? I think that is just awful.
Well, a couple of points, Paul. Number one, there is no mayor's race this year. John Mitchell has a four-year seat. So he will not, his seat will not be up until 2027. And the mayor's race is always the most exciting race. It has the greatest expenditure of funds, greatest attention by the media. Number two, there wasn't a single ward race in the city of New Bedford. The assessor's race, the incumbent, was uncontested. And in the school board race, where there are three seats available, there were actually two open seats, and only four people bothered to run. So you and I have talked in the past about where have all the voters gone. I think the question of last week, actually this week, is where have all the candidates gone? You simply have no candidates nowadays running for office. There was no mayor's preliminary in Taunton. Taunton, by the way, had a 7% turnout. So New Bedford was even lower than Taunton.
Right. So where have all the candidates gone? Is there an argument to be made, not only that people are frustrated, but for someone to actually run for office, you know, things have gotten so contentious that do people think, gee, I'm going to run for office and then people are going to be banging me around and then my opponent's going to be, you know, coming, you know, saying all kinds of things and then it's going to become ugly. And I just don't want to go through the aggravation and, you know, put my family through all that.
Well, you know, I'm sure we can all remember the two legislators from Minnesota who were murdered. I'm sure we can all remember Representative Kathy Gifford of Arizona, who was shot. But you're right, the vitriol on, particularly on social media, not just about the candidate's position, but about their personal life, about their families, their spouses, their children. An awful lot of people just say, simply not worth it.
Well, let's break down the election as it did happen. I think there are a number of stories. Of course, no surprise that Ian Abreu would be in the number one spot, has been there many times before. Shane Burgo with a big support group out there in the public at number two, Brian Gomes at number three. But then you look at four, five, six, and seven. Devin Burns, the owner of Destination Soups, at number four. Just two votes behind him, James Roy, number five. And then it looks like about 36 votes below that is Jennifer Reuter at number six. And then Naomi Carney, city incumbent, drops down to number seven. So between four and seven, if I've calculated it correctly, I think it looks like about 41 votes separating those four candidates. Very fascinating.
You're absolutely right, Paul. There's essentially the race in November. And a couple of points that need to be made. One is, unlike other cities in Massachusetts, there are only 4 weeks, or will be 4 weeks, between the preliminary election and the final. That is, in my judgment, an improperly shot period of time. Boston is more like 8 or 9 weeks. Fall River is, I believe, 7 weeks. Taunton, we mentioned earlier, is 6 weeks. That is a very short time for anyone to successfully mount a campaign, particularly someone who finished downhill in the at-large race. You're absolutely right. There are only 40-some votes between number 4 and number 7. If the predictions of the election office are correct, there may be as much as 4,500 more voters who will vote in November than voted earlier this week. So I think we can make a couple of conclusions about the at-large race. One is the top three, Abreu, Burgo, Gomes, will be reelected. Those who finished downstream, the 8, 9, 10, really have their work cut out for them. Not only are they behind numerically, but they're going to have to jump over several people. So, for example, Chris Carter, who, in the eyes of many people, surprisingly finished in the 9th position. Mr. Carter is a member of the school board, has run successfully citywide twice before. For him to move up to position number 5, he's going to have to jump over 4 people. And that is a real difficult thing to do.
Right, and you get Scott Lima, too. Scott Lima was a member of the city council before, so that was a surprise, too, that, you know, I thought Scott Lima and Chris Carter would certainly be somewhere near number 5, maybe not necessarily in the top 5, but, you know, it's big when you've been on the ballot before and you have that kind of name recognition.
Yeah, and I think that's the message of this election. Not only the gentleman who finished 4 and 5, who you just mentioned, but the gentleman who didn't finish in the top 5, and that, of course, would be former Ward 5 Councilor Scott Lima, who finished 8th, and present New Bedford School Board member Chris Carter, who finished 9th. This was clearly a race where the voters said, we want newness on the New Bedford City Council, new voices, new names, new individuals. And that's exactly what happened.
If you have any questions or comments for Tom Hunt or myself, give us a call here at 508-996-0500. A couple of issues. What can be done about this abysmal voter turnout? Anybody feel any frustration out there? I think it's outrageous that over 90% of the people, yeah, it's true, we don't have a mayor's race, and Tom very correctly breaks it down as part of the reason why we don't have this participation, but to have it be that low at 5.77%, absolutely horrendous. What do you think about that? And then the other thing I wanted to mention to you, Tom, because it was controversial, and a lot of people were talking about it here at the station, Election Commissioner Manny DiBrito wanted to move back the preliminary election. And there was this talk about, oh, my God, the fix is in. You can't do that. What are you doing and all that? And I think around the state, pretty much everybody moved the preliminary election back except New Bedford. And people in the Boston were like, what's the matter with New Bedford? In fact, they even asked the second time, like, what's the matter with you, New Bedford? Why don't you want to make it longer? And there was this big pushback to keep it the way that it is. You think that they should have moved it back. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
For what reason?
It gives challengers more time to campaign. I'm a big fan of challengers running against incumbents. It allows incumbents to learn where they're standing. You mentioned Councilor Connie.
Right. I was going to ask you about that.
She's in seventh place. And had there been a preliminary way back in early to mid-September, she wouldn't be faced with the situation she is now. She's now in a situation with only 3.5 weeks to go. She has to go from 7 to 5, which means she has to leap over two candidates who finished ahead of her. That's not going to be an easy thing to do.
All right, 508-996-0500. Our guest is political analyst Tom Hunt. We've had the great opportunity to work with Tom on election night coverage for many, many years. Always feels the pulse of what's going on in the community. Would you look at this, Tom, and say that there's an anti-incumbent feel because not only Naomi dropping down, but Scott Lehman and Chris Carter not in the top five, and but for the top three that you mentioned, Abreu, Burgo, and Gomes. You have the next three, two of which are local business owners in downtown New Bedford, Destination Soups, Devin Burns, Jennifer Arruda, Art Gallery downtown, very, vocal in her positions in terms of social justice and the like. And then you have James Roy, who finished at number five. So you got a lot of new blood there and two local business owners.
I would have to say that... The campaign I was most impressed with would be the Arruda campaign. Michelle Arruda, first-time candidate, finished sixth. It's my understanding. Ms. Arruda is out of Ward 2. I understand the turnout in Ward 2 was abysmal, less than 4%. Yet, nevertheless, she defeated a longtime city councilor, Naomi Carney, and certainly is in within striking distance of not only position 5, but position 4.
All right, I'm looking at the voter turnout by ward, and it looks like Ward 5 had the most voters at 9.5%, and Ward 2 had the lowest turnout at 3.8%. So the fact that you had a higher turnout in Ward 5, is that because a lot of the candidates that were running at large were from that area? Or is that how that broke down, or am I incorrect on that?
Well, sure. Scott Lehman was the Ward 5 councilor. Two of the two who finished 4th and 5th are from Ward 5, but Ward 5 always votes. There's this apocryphal story about this gentleman from Florida who used to rob banks. He was a surfer. His name was Murphy, and when he was finally caught and subjected to the perp walk into the police station, a reporter yelled out to him, Murph, why do you rob banks? And his response was, because that's where they keep the money. Ward 5 has always had a lot of elected officials in it. Rosemary Tanney, Jack Markey, John Bullitt, John Mitchell. And people in Ward 5 tend to vote, and that's why you have candidates coming out of Ward 5.
All right, we're going to go to our break. If you'd like to get in on the discussion, 508-996-0500. We're going to talk to Tom about a few things. Number one, what he thinks is going to happen in the finals, because most of the time the order in the preliminary is the same order in the finals. But because this was a little different, and there's only 41 votes between 4 and 7, might there be the opportunity for these names to jumble up a little bit? Number two, what can we do about this horrible voter turnout? I was actually looking at what some other democracies around the world do and how they handle it. Should we do that here in the United States? I don't know. That and more coming up next here at WBSM. We'll be right back.
Paul Santos is on the air. Join the conversation and call in now. Open up the WBSM app and hit call us. Now, back to Paul.
Peace up, A-Town. Yeah! Okay! Let's go!
You know, I like that funky music from my DJ days. So I've been getting compliments about the music. You like that one, Tom?
No. Jimmy Joan Baez.
All right. 508-996-0500. Before we go to the phones, we didn't mention the fact that one of the things that makes the councilor-at-large race interesting is the fact that Linda Morad has decided not to run.
A 20-year veteran of the council, beginning as a Ward 1 councilor and then moving on to at-large. Been president of the council on more than one occasion, it occurs to me. I don't think there's any question that if she had run, she would have been reelected. And she has decided to move on to other things with her life, and that's why we have an open seat.
Right, and I think if you look back at Ian Abreu, who has run some great campaigns over the years, you know, he would come in sixth a lot at first until somebody didn't run, and then he nailed that five spot and, of course, has gone on to be a very successful councilor at large. Same thing with Shane Burgo. He got in a year that there was an open seat. So when you have that open seat, it's a great opportunity for people to jump in there.
Whenever individuals pick up the phone and call me and ask me if they should run or not, my response is always the same. The only method that can absolutely guarantee you not winning the election is not running. So I'm a big fan of the more people that run, the better it is.
All right, we're talking to a political analyst, Tom Hunt. Give us a call at 508-996-0500. We go back to the phones and say, hello, you are on the air.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning, Mr. Hunt. Billy Sacchioli.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm glad, Mr. Hunt, that you're on the radio. Now, I'm going to ask a question. Isn't it true that 40% of the people, when they vote for the number one spot? Mr. Hunt?
In other words, I think he's saying, like, you know, the incumbents are at the top. They're in alphabetical order. That gives a big advantage, does it? Let's ask Tom. Tom, what do you say about that?
Oh, that's a huge advantage. Michael Perry,
number one,
who was election commissioner under Mayor Markey for many years, told me it was anywhere between a 12 to a 14% advantage of the incumbents being listed first on the ballot alphabetically. And that's particularly so in what is commonly called a down-ballot race. School board, even counselor at large. And, okay, you know, in political talk, 10 points, 55-45, is a landslide. So when if you are a challenger and there are no open seats, you're starting off at a significant disadvantage.
Okay.
In Boston, the way it's done is the names are just thrown in a hat. And the incumbent, if you want to vote for an incumbent, you actually have to find them on the ballot. But again, Massachusetts, in New Bedford,
it's by incumbent and then alphabetical order.
The incumbents are in alphabetical order.
Can I ask another thing? Just want to bring something up.
Yes.
About, you know, you said Ian Abreu always gets high up there, right?
Yes.
But also, I want to know why he wanted to move to Fairhaven and work for Fairhaven while he was a city councilor here and everybody wanted him to run for mayor. Why did he take a shot to work in Fairhaven and never once told the public that if I'm elected, if I get the job in Fairhaven, I won't be a city council? He was trying to serve two bosses.
All right, let's get Tom's comment on that.
I have another question after that.
Well, real quick, because I got another one online. Go ahead, ask it now, and then I'll have him do both. what was your other question?
No, my other question is, you know, they say Brian Gomes. You got to remember something about Brian Gomes. He always had somebody to guide him. It was John Saunders that guided him. Now then he had Linda Morad guiding him. He never made any decisions by himself. He was just doing what those two people were telling him to do. So that's why he has lasted so long. But that's the thing with the politics in New Bedford.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for the call. We're going to get Tom's comment. The first thing about Mr. Abreu seeking a position in another town.
Well, sure. But if I'm not mistaken, the town manager in the town of Swansea is a member of the Fall River City Council. You know, I don't think it's a conflict. You know, obviously there's been an attempt to unite the communities of southeastern Massachusetts. That's where the phrase South Coast came from. The Chamber of Commerce is now the South Coast Chamber of Commerce. We have regional, vocational, technical high schools. No, I don't see it as a conflict.
All right, he made a comment about Brian Gomes. I have to tell you, you know, Brian Gomes, whether you agree with him or not, right, I think it's hard to say that you don't know where he stands. I mean, he will get up on that floor and he will tell you, here's my opinion. And he has a good, solid base of followers. So I don't know that I necessarily agree with that caller that he just follows along with somebody else. What's your thoughts on Brian Gomes?
Paul, I've known Councilor Gomes for, I'm adding it up in my head now, like 40-some years.
Right, me too.
I consider Brian a friend. And no, I don't give any grace to the comment that he is being led by others. He's his own man and is unafraid to stand up on the council floor on his own 2 feet and express his point of view.
My guest here is political analyst Tom Hunt, who has his pulse on local politics. In fact, you know, both of myself and Attorney Hunt are practitioners here in New Bedford, or were. We're sort of in the semi-retire phase right now, but I would see Tom in court. And they had a lawyer's waiting room. And every time I saw Tom, I think, oh, I'm going to get the pulse of what's going on here politically. And 9 times out of 10, he would make predictions that came out to be true. So if you have any questions for Tom, 508-996-0500. Hello, you're next on WBSM.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Hunt.
Good morning.
I want to talk a little bit about the advantage of incumbency. And I don't think this is a good time to sign an obituary for Ms. Carney. I think she was one vote behind Ms. Arruda, and Ms. Arruda was actually fifth on the ballot. Those top five slots have an advantage, and I think Ms. Arruda had an advantage there. But she's only a short distance away from the fourth spot. I'm going to predict that she gains a seat back, and here's the reasons. There is the advantage of the incumbency. When the final general election comes, she will be placed alphabetically at the top, and because of her experience campaigning, which some of the challengers do not have, I think she's going to be able to even this one out as an incumbent. So there is that advantage of incumbency on where you spend your money, when you spend your money, day of the week you spend your money, that a lot of the challengers haven't had in terms of experience.
Well, let me jump in for a second. Just hold on the phone just for a second. Tom, I'd like to pick up on what the caller is saying there, right? So in other words, somebody like a Naomi Carney, maybe, and I'm not speaking for her, maybe she went into this, you know, maybe not mobilizing her voters, you know, and now this could be a wake-up call that maybe she goes out and gets her supporters and say, hey, look, you know, I just need to jump these people who maybe don't have the same experience to mobilize my followers, right? So does that give her an advantage to possibly go against the grain of what tradition tells us? Tradition tells us that the way it is in the preliminary is the way it is in the finals. Might it be different this time for that reason?
I'm going to quote Mark Twain, who said that
Mark Twain
predictions of my demise are greatly overstated. As I said earlier, there will be 4,500 approximately more people voting in November than voted earlier this week. The caller is absolutely correct. Carney is an incumbent and will be, her name will appear fourth on the ballot after Council President Burgo and before longtime Councilor Brian Gomes. She has a platform, the New Bedford City Council, and she is not dramatically behind number four or number five. But she will have to overstep two candidates at minimum, those who finish sixth and fifth. Only 3.5 weeks. And if indeed she did not mobilize her supporters prior to the primary, well, now she has a great reason to do so.
Do you have another question, caller?
Well, I'm going to predict that she comes in fourth, for one. The second piece is you really have to, you know, I get a little more involved than most people regarding the city council, having been one. And I think, you know, I look back at her as a council president, and I think she did a terrific job there. I don't agree with everything that she did or what she said about certain issues. But as far as being a council president, I think she did a good job. So her work ethic in the council, I think, and the behind-the-scenes stuff that she does is very important. And certainly, you know, I'm going to cast a vote for her as we move forward. But thank you for your time, Mr. Hunt. You're pretty good at it. But I think Connie's going to come in fourth.
All right. Yep. Thank you very much. Tom, I don't know if you wanted to get into the prediction business, but I know you've told me before that most of the time, you know, I don't know if it's 9 times out of 10, but certainly an overwhelming majority of the time, the way it is in the preliminary ends up the way it is in the finals. But that's not always the case. So what do you think the chances are of, say, Naomi mobilizing her base and overtaking these other candidates? Is it good? Is it not that good?
Well, you know, as we said, we have to begin with the fact that there was a 5.77 turnout earlier this week. Very small number of people voting, around 4,600. There will be, in my judgment, perhaps as many as 4,500 more voters voting in November. I think it's extremely likely that anyone who went out earlier this week to vote will not vote in November. So, you know, Connie, while she has her work cut out for her, no, it's as the caller has pointed out, it's not unreasonable to think that she could not find her way back to the fourth or fifth spot. There were only 2 votes, by the way, between number four and number five, so virtually 4 and 5 have the same votes.
And actually, Carney from number 7 to number 5, right? The number 5 finisher, James Roy, 1642. Naomi Carney, 1403. So, you know, it's still within, you know, the realm of possibility that if she mobilizes her followers, that she could rally and grab that 5 spot. But you would say, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, you would say that the people that are already in 4 and 5, they would have to be the favorites at this point, would you say?
Well, I think it's extremely likely that anyone who voted for 4 or 5 earlier this week will not be voting for them in November. I think that's guaranteed they will vote for them in November. I think everyone who voted Tuesday will vote mm-hmm. in November.
Yeah.
239 votes is not impossible to make up, again, with 4,500 more voters. But I think while we talked about Connie mobilizing her votes, I think the 4 and 5 finishers are certainly going to mobilize their votes. They can now, as the expression goes, smell victory. So I think as hard as they work, they'll be working even harder between now and November 4th.
All right, we're talking to a political analyst, Tom Hunt. We're coming down to the final 20 minutes or so, and we've got a couple of commercial breaks. So if you want to call in and ask Tom a quick question or make a quick comment, 508-996-0500. I'm going to ask Tom a couple of questions. Number one, should it not be that the incumbents are at the top? Should it not be that, you know, the candidates are in alphabetical order? Like, why should somebody that's, you know, name has, you know, begins with an A or a B, you know, have an advantage over somebody like myself who is an S or Tom Hunt, an H in the middle of the alphabet? Why should that be an advantage? Should they do it like they do in Boston? What does Tom think about that? Number two, there are other countries that do it differently, that actually have mandatory voting. What about that? That's a radical thought. What does Tom think about that? We'll ask him right after the break here at WBSM.
Tom. lively discussions, special guests, and your voice. This is the Paul Santos Show on WBSM.
And even when I'm old and gray, I'm gonna feel the way I do today. 'Cause you make me feel so young.
All right. You know, I like a lot of different kinds of music. I go from Usher to Frank Sinatra. I have a feeling that Tom likes that one a little bit better than that last one. Is that right, Tom?
Actually, my favorite is Peter, Paul, and Mary. So,
Paul, and Mary. Okay.
I go way back.
You know what I have to do is when we have guests here, and I think we've done it too, a lot of the guests, we ask the guests what songs they like, and we try to cue up songs that the guests like. So I'll have to do that next time. Anyway, we're talking to political analyst Tom Hunt, 508-996-0500. I wanted to ask you about this alphabet thing that one of the callers brought up. You know, I mean, the incumbents don't want to change it because obviously if you're an incumbent, you want to be at the top of the ballot. If you have a letter that's A, B, C, or D, you don't want to change it either because then you're at the top of the ballot after the incumbents. So isn't it fair to do like they do in Boston, just throw the names in a hat and whatever way it comes out is the way it comes out. Everybody has the same shot.
Well, I think it is more fair throwing the names in the hat. I mean, it's, you know, if you're Irish in Boston, you're going to have an advantage. If you are from Dorchester in Boston, you're going to have an advantage. You know, we talked about Ward 5 in New Bedford. You can never have a system where everything is perfect. But the system that's in place now is simply unfair to the challengers. So, yes, I favor throwing the names in the hat, and how they come out is how they come out.
All right, so you agree that they should make that change, but it probably will never happen because the incumbents would have to change it, right? And they're not going to want to change it.
The city code would have to be changed by the incumbents, and I see no reason why they would want to do so.
By the way, you were talking about the lack of candidates, and of course the school board does not get paid. I know you're a proponent of paying the school board. I know even in Dartmouth, there are some that say that the select board should get paid. The last time I covered the town election, which I do in Dartmouth, there were vacancies all over the place. Is it time to give at least some kind of reasonable stipend to a lot of things like the school board or the town select boards?
Oh, it's past time. You know, it costs the same amount of money to run a radio ad for a non-paying school board race as it does for the city council, who I think is now around 29,000, as it does for the mayor, who's around 130 or 140. You know, I mean, the evidence is in front of us. You know, you have two open seats on the school committee, and you have a total of four people running. I don't know how you can make a better case for some level of compensation than that.
All right. In the school board race coming up on November the 4th, Colleen DeWicke and Ross Grace Jr. have both decided not to run. So basically you have the incumbent Melissa Costa, Marcus Coward, Vaughn Marie Moniz, and former school teacher Richard Porter, and three of those will get in. So only one of those will be eliminated. That's a very small slate. And again, if you had a reasonable stipend, you probably would get a lot more people to run for that spot, right?
Well, you certainly hope so. Yeah, I would say so.
All right. And on the ward races, obviously we didn't discuss that because, you know, there was no preliminary. But real quickly here, Leo Choquette versus Matthew Marco. Thoughts on that race?
Well, I think Mr. Choquette has been on the right side about the facility in the New Bedford Business Park, that area of town, the far north end, Sassaquin, Pine Hill Acres, always votes very heavily, and I think he's on the right side of that issue, and I would be surprised if he's not reelected.
Ward 2, November the 4th, it will be incumbent Maria Giesta against challenger Scott Pemberton.
Well, Mr. Pemberton has run before and has done well, although has never, you know, finished first. Maria Giesta has run for mayor. But, you know, it's very dangerous for a ward counselor to not have a preliminary election, to not know what where your strengths are, to not know where your weaknesses are, to not know where your opponent's strengths are. And, you know, we've had ward counselors who we thought were going to be overwhelmingly reelected. I remember when Ralph Sonia lost down Ward 6. I remember Nelson Macedo and Rita Moniz losing in 5, Cynthia Kruger in 3. It's always dangerous to not have an opponent.
And the thing about the Maria Giesta-Scott Pemberton race is, you know, Maria Giesta, very vocal person. It seems like people either really like her or really don't like her. And so Scott Pemberton certainly has an opportunity there. And now an issue has come up here most recently. Scott Pemberton tried to run a, I believe it was a hot dog business. The business was not successful. And it's very challenging to try to get a restaurant going. 60, 70% of restaurants fail. Very difficult prospect. He said he learned. He tried to make it work. It didn't work. They shouldn't be held against him. But then there was a question of ARPA funds. He was granted $10,000 in ARPA funds. It didn't work out. Is that the kind of issue that would really hurt Mr. Pemberton? Or do you think that's just something that, you know, the voter would say, well, you know what? Hey, you got to give him credit for trying to open a business and, you know, try to better himself and his family.
Well, I'm going to say it's not going to hurt him, Paul, because as you articulated it, was the first time I've ever heard of it. So
okay.
If I haven't heard of it, I'm not sure how many other people in Ward 2 have heard of it.
All right. Sean Oliver, unopposed Ward 3, very well-known counselor. What do you think about him? Obviously unopposed, so he's not going to have a race. But
yeah. You know, if you're my experience is politicians are unopposed for a reason. It's because they're popular and they're perceived as doing a good job.
Derek Baptiste is unopposed in Ward 4, and in Ward 6, Ryan Pereira is unopposed. So that leaves us with Ward 5. It's going to be Joe Lopes versus R. Renee Fernandes. Another interesting race, I would say.
Again, with no preliminary, it's hard to know exactly, as the incumbent, where you stand. I think Joe Lopes, people remember, was the very popular Ward 6 counselor. But was defeated for re-election, subsequently moved into Ward 5 and ran in Ward 5 in an open seat when Scott Wiemer decided he was going to try the counselor-at-large race. So it's hard to know where that race is, particularly because Fernandes is a first-time candidate and we don't have a scoreboard as to, you know, how she's done in the past.
Right. Same thing with Ward 2. It's dangerous, as you said, for an incumbent not to have the preliminary because you really don't know where you are. Same thing in Ward 5, I would imagine. That same analysis would certainly hold true there, too.
And perhaps even more so in Ward 5 because Ward 5 has a history of voting out incumbents. We talked about Nelson Macedo. We talked about Rita Moniz. I think that's a difficult race to predict.
All right, and Assessor-at-Large Peter Berthume is also unopposed on November 4th, so very, very interesting. I'm going to ask Tom a little bit about how some other countries get those numbers up with this abysmal 6% voting. There are other countries that do things much differently than the United States. Is it time to start thinking about doing things the way the other countries do? We'll ask them that in just a moment. 508-996-0500. Back in a moment with political analyst Tom Hunt. The times, they are changing. Ah, that's appropriate for 2025, is it not, Tom? I guess so, right? All right, let's talk a little bit about a couple of things. You know, a lady called up before and said, I remember the old days of the Standard Times. You pick it up, the obituaries are on page 2. They had a whole election section. Everybody was kind of reading the same thing. The other thing that used to happen back in the day is a lot of times candidates would get endorsements. You know, you get the big endorsement from the Standard Times. And Tom always felt that, you know, the endorsement of the newspaper wasn't particularly important. Is that right, Tom?
Oh, I think it's extraordinarily unimportant. You know, I was endorsed every time I ran, and I lost my first election, so, you know, I'm not a big guy on endorsements.
So what is an endorsement worth?
Well, in my judgment, it's worth very little. I mean, I think people resent being told how they should vote. And I just don't think it has any value nowadays.
Well, you had a saying they used to say. Remember about what an endorsement was worth or how many people would vote for you?
Well, I think what I said is if you're talking about other endorsements where Harry endorses Susie, my comment was that's worth exactly two votes, assuming A, Harry is married, and B, Harry is happily married.
Exactly. That's the one. That's the one that we like. Well, anyway, we talked about the voter turnout, just under 6%. And what can be done about that? You know, there are actually other countries. I think Australia is one of them that actually requires voting. Now, I don't know how they do it. I don't know what the penalty is for not voting. But, you know, is it time to entertain something that radical? And if not, what else can be done to get those numbers up to respectability?
Well, when I was running, the polls were open from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Now they're open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. When I was running, if you want an absentee ballot, you virtually needed a letter from the chief of orthopedics at Mass General Hospital as to why you couldn't physically get out. Now, you don't need a letter from anybody. We have early voting. We have mail-in voting.
Not working, though.
Sure. In some countries, they have weekend voting, which goes essentially from 12 noon on Saturday to 6 p.m. on Sunday. That's an idea. I don't know why we always have to have Tuesday voting.
I like that idea, the weekend voting. People could have from Friday to Sunday. I mean, that seems reasonable.
Yeah, certainly internet voting.
People are going to say it's hard to have that feel trustworthy when you're messing around with the internet. You have the hackability and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. That's an idea. In New Bedford, at one time, I believe there were 54 precincts. Now there are 36, but they're much better located, far better parking, far better handicapped access. I don't think the problem is anything more than apathy.
Let's get a little bit of a prediction out of Tom Hunt here. Do you think it's more likely that the way that it finished in the preliminary will stand, even though the numbers are so close? Or do you think that when you take number four to number seven, you can just kind of jumble them up, they could end up in any possible order?
I think essentially it's a four-way race for two seats. As you said, it's four through seven, and they could be jumbled up any way possible.
Right. Once again, the top three, Ian Ebreu, Shane Burgo, Brian Gomes, certainly very safe. Number four, Devin Burns, the owner of Destination Soups. At number five, James Roy. At number six, Jennifer Arruda, the owner of our art gallery in downtown New Bedford, politically active. At number seven, we have the incumbent Naomi Carney. Only 41 votes separates number four to number seven. So that makes it a little bit different, perhaps, than some other preliminaries.
Right. And again, I'm going to repeat what I've said more than once during this broadcast. With a break from the weather, I think there'll be around 4,500 more people voting in November than voted earlier this week.
All right. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank Attorney Tom Hunt. I forgot to mention, former member of the New Bedford School Committee. That's why he was mentioning about how when he ran, you know, it was this way and it was that way. Tom, always a lot of fun. Hopefully we can get our Facebook Live working on election night and be right down there at City Hall to follow what happens here in the finals.
Thank you. I will be there, Paul.
All right. So November the 4th, get out and vote in the finals. And, of course, we'll be back next week here at WBSM. The television show, we're back taping again Tuesday night at Mikey B's. And, of course, the show airs Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock on Channel 95, the Paul Santos Live TV show. And it also airs biweekly on ABC 6 at 11:30. Not tomorrow, as every other week.